Please rise. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Rodenberg, Judge Smith, Judge Klaphake, the Honorable John R. Rodenberg presiding.
You may be seated. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have three oral matters on the calendar this morning, the first of which is Schatz. Am I pronouncing the name correctly?
Schatz.
Versus State of Minnesota. Looks like counsel are both here and ready to proceed. You'll each have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. When you approach the podium, give us your name so that we've got that for the recording. You can adjust the podium to fit your height and comfort. There's a little toggle switch somewhere down there. Mr. Longsdorf, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. My name is Zach Longsdorf. I represent Appellant Anthony Schatz. This appeal stems from the denial of Mr. Schatz's motion to withdraw his June 4th, 2018 probation violation admission after a hearing in the LeSueur County District Court.
Can I ask you about that? What case law or statute or rule allows for or provides for the withdrawal of an admission of probation? Your brief looks like it's talking about withdrawals of pleas of guilty.
I'm not aware of any case law that specifically says that a defendant can withdraw an admission to a probation violation, but I'm also not aware through the research that we did of any case law that specifically says that a defendant cannot withdraw an admission to a probation violation. And so our position on that would be, aside from the standard of proof being clear and convincing instead of beyond a reasonable doubt and the right to a jury trial, a defendant has the right to most of the same, or has most of the same rights as part of a probation violation hearing as they do with a regular plea. And so our position is that it would be appropriate to treat a probation violation the same way, particularly in a case like this where there's evidence that shows that the test result itself was actually negative. And so Mr. Schatz is the primary issue before the court today for Mr. Schatz.
Well, I have
Schatz.
Another question before you get to your primary issue.
Yes.
Since the trial court found there were two violations of probation, one was that second DWI and then this supposed test of marijuana, what would withdrawal of the probation violation or the admission on the marijuana result in anything different than what we already have? But if there's a violation of the DWI, that supports the probation violation and the vacation of the sentence and the execution of it. So what is this all about?
Well, Your Honor, actually, the way I understand the record is this, that it was March 20th of 2018 when Mr. Schatz went in for the plea hearing on case 6, the one that ended in 640. On that same day, according to at least my recollection of the transcript, they dealt with the probation violation in 778.
The new conviction.
Yeah, the earlier conviction related to that the same day. And so that probation violation was essentially dealt with, adjudicated, and was rolled into this 365 days in jail, and then the additional terms in probation continued as it was. And then what happened was Mr. Schatz was taken into custody on March 20th of 2018, and then the rapid test was March 22nd of 2018, and then the probation violation, I think, was filed maybe that same day. And the only issue in that probation violation, as I understand it, was the failed marijuana test.
Well, I have the transcript from that probation violation hearing in 2018. And in that, the court finds two violations, the DWI from the original DWI, the probation violation, or violation of the probation from the first DWI by reason of the second DWI conviction, and the test business. And so if that's true, then the court went on to vacate the sentence or vacate the stay and order execution of sentence. So I'm still trying to figure out what difference does it make whether you have a second probation violation on the marijuana or not. Still going to be a vacated state sentence and executed sentence.
If that's...
Help me here.
Pardon?
Help me here. Understand this.
Well, I guess the way I understood it was that those two were dealt with separately, and maybe my recollection is off, but I believe that the June 4th, 2018 hearing was specifically related to the marijuana, and that's what was on the order, and that's what was dealt with that day, and that was the reason for the violation, and that the March 20th sentencing dealt with the probation violation related to the second DUI and was continued on the same terms, essentially, except for that 365 days was executed. And so if I'm...
So there were intermediate sanctions already on that DWI probation violation, you're saying?
Yeah.
And then the later one related to marijuana was stands alone?
Yes, and I think, and it maybe is in the record, but the probation violation order, or not the order, but the probation violation document related to the marijuana only spoke to the marijuana and not to anything else, because I think that had already been dealt with prior to that.
In the district court's order on the later request to withdraw the admission, it seems like the district court treated it the way you're now saying. That is that there on March 20th, they dealt with, it actually wasn't his second DWI, it was his ninth DWI. But they dealt with that question, and then when he went over to the jail, they had to give him a test to see if he qualified for work release, and that's when the 39 nanograms, whatever, test came back.
That's my understanding, Your Honor, and I do think that the district court's July 5th, 2019 order kind of tracks right along with that, with the fact that we were only dealing with that probation violation related to the marijuana test as the reason for the 4 years being executed.
Here's my question on that. The state of the record, as I read the judge's order and as I read the record, is not that there's just a urine test with a 39 nanogram result. There's actually an admission form that says in bold letters a bunch of stuff that I admit these things, followed by sworn testimony by your client that he used marijuana in the form of some chewable something or other for back pain, an admission. So why are we worried about whether the 39 would, standing alone, warrant a finding of use of marijuana when he testified under oath that he used marijuana?
Well, I think the way we're looking at it is that when Mr. Schott signed that document, the one you're talking about was on March 26th of 2018, he was interrogated in the jail there, and it was 4 days after the rapid test. Mr. Schatz was brought in, and he's with three or maybe four jailers, and then eventually his probation officer, and is told over and over and over that your test is positive, you've got to admit this, it's your only hope to avoid going to prison. And eventually, although he initially denied use, he came to believe that that was the only way that he could avoid prison, because he didn't know the test was negative. And so he says, well, if I had tested positive, it must have been because I was near my fiance who had a prescription for medical marijuana. And our position is that his will at that time was overcome, because he wasn't notified. He had no idea that this test is actually negative, and he's just told over and over and over that the test is positive, and his only hope here is to admit it and then beg for mercy, when in actuality that test is negative, and if he were just to remain silent, there's a negative test and no admission, there probably isn't even actually a probation violation. And the way the system is set up, once that initial admission is out there, because the district court has this huge level of discretion in how to deal with a probation violation, ranging from just continuing probation as it was to executing the entire sentence, that a defendant's consideration kind of changes even if that first admission isn't truthful. And then once he gets to court, his option really is admit it and beg for mercy and hope that he can avoid going to prison, even though the initial admission really wasn't accurate and is actually, I think, supported by the fact that the test itself came back negative.
And going back to my original question, I beg to differ with your characterization of the 26th hearing. I have before me the violation report dated March 22, and it lists two violations. One, the new DWI conviction and sentence, which occurred on the 21st, and secondly, the marijuana incident. And this is a report dated March 22. So that hearing on the probation violation clearly was on both of the claimed violations, including that second, ninth, seventh, whichever one it was, the most recent DWI plea and sentence. So, and if that's true, and I thought somewhere in the findings, the court found that there was a violation of probation based upon both of these items. And if that's true, and then the court executes the sentence on the DWI, and still back to my question, then why are we spending any time on this marijuana business? Because if we somehow agreed with you and said that this was inappropriate and wasn't the basis for that probation violation on the marijuana, so what? The other one still exists.
If it was in that order and if this 48 months executed was because of two reasons, then I would agree that vacating one of them or finding one of them was inaccurate would not be a basis to overturn
it.
Well,
do you have a copy of the violation report?
I don't know if I actually have it in front of me, Your Honor, but as we went through the transcript.
You can have mine if you like. I'm just reading from it.
Well, as far as my recollection goes, that they dealt with that first probation violation on the time when he came in and was sentenced for the second, or I guess the ninth, the July 2017 DUI. And this really is the first time that this has come up in these proceedings, which is why I haven't really got that committed into my memory. But if they were both sentenced at the same time, then I agree that this wouldn't really be an issue, but our recollection and the way that this case has progressed has always been, is it seemed as though it was sentenced at first, and then this was dealt with solely on its own on June 14th of 2018. And my recollection is that the June 4th of 2018, the only violation that was found was the probate or the marijuana and not the second DUI.
It does look like they're contained in one report.
Well, if my memory and my reading of that was incorrect, then I would agree with that assessment. But I'm not in a position, I guess, at this point to agree completely that that's exactly how it went. And just the way this case has proceeded has led me to believe that I don't think that's what actually happened.
Can I ask, counsel, so with respect to the merits of your argument, are you asking us to conclude that the district court clearly erred by finding the testimony credible that, in fact, he ingested marijuana?
Yes, Your Honor, and the reason that we're asking that is that it's not supported by the state's own testing protocol, which they set it up. You know, it's through a company, I guess, that they run, but essentially, when it comes right down to it, they said the amount of 39 nanograms per milliliter is a negative test. I think that
does that render it factually impossible that in fact he ingested marijuana, the fact that there's that test result?
I don't think that it renders it factually impossible that he ingested marijuana, but I think by relying on the 39 nanograms per milliliter and saying that that's proof that there was marijuana use, but now that it's kind of going out of Mr. Schatz's system, then there must have been use in the past. It also is attributing something to that test that just isn't actually in what the test is showing. And the fact is, as I think about it, if that's what that test meant, that there was use and now it's going out of his system, I believe the test would be labeled positive and not negative. And the reason, as we look at how these tests work, it's negative at that point is because there's other factors beyond marijuana use that could lead to that result, and then it doesn't even justify doing further testing. And
if both things can be true, that he ingested marijuana and that the test result shows negative under the standard, and the district court found credible the testimony that he in fact ingested marijuana, why would that be clear error?
I think it would be clear error because, one, Mr. Schatz has provided testimony about how his will was overcome, and then the other part is, just as part of Mr. Schatz's, from this June 2017 DUI to his sentencing in March of 2018, he had a plea, but he didn't have an agreed-upon sentence, and he had spent that entire time working on inpatient treatment facilities, doing two of those, doing an outpatient, living in sober housing, being subjected to weekly UA tests, and that's just not his initial denial and his current denial are consistent with the fact that the test was labeled negative, and that's why we believe that it was error for the district court to reach the conclusion it did. One, because it gave that 39 nanograms per milliliter significance that it didn't really have based on how the tests work, and two, just because of how this was going for Mr. Schatz. And he initially denied, then he was interrogated, admitted, and then admitted at court, which he has contended flowed directly from that March 26th admission. And then there really was his only option at the time. But if we look at what the facts actually show, we don't believe it supports it, primarily because of the test that the prosecution ran to use against my client was negative in this case.
When he made the sworn testimony that he used marijuana, he had a lawyer, right?
Yes.
He was sworn. He was under oath.
Yes.
And that statement that he made in court while under oath with represented by a lawyer was consistent with the form he signed and the test he took, right?
Well, I think it was consistent with the form he signed, but it wasn't consistent with the test, which came back negative.
The test didn't really, I don't, well, whatever. We can quarrel. The test came back below the threshold to be reported as positive. It showed the presence of the drug, but not at a level to be reported as positive. 50 is the break point to report it as positive.
Yeah, below 50, comes back negative, and I think it said negative right on the test. And then if it's below that, then there's no more testing done or any confirmation because there's reasons beyond marijuana that suggest that's why it's at that number.
Okay, the time is up.
Certainly
may.
Can you remind me, at the time of the sworn testimony, did your client have the test result?
Yes, he was aware of it by then.
And yet, nevertheless, swore under oath that he had consumed marijuana?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
I just want to leave you with one question that I'd like you to address on rebuttal, and that is this, going way back to the beginning and Judge Klapacki's question, since there's no law on this topic, if we were to rule in your favor, it seems like we would have to do so in a published opinion, and if we were to do that, we ought to have in mind what the syllabus point would be. What is the point of law that you would have us hold that we apply the guilty plea standard to probation violation admissions? That'll give you something to think about. Respondent, whenever you're ready.
If it may please the court, Jason Moran, Assistant County Attorney, Basura County, for the respondent.
Sir, you've reviewed that probation violation report, have you, of March 22?
I have.
Do you agree that both items, both the most recent DWI and that sentencing and the probation violation were both listed as violations?
I do. And, Judge, if I could just expand on that a little bit. I know I didn't touch on it in my brief because it's really never been raised. The failure to remain law-abiding has really never been raised as a defense by the defense. But at any rate, on page 5, lines 15 through 21 contains...
Which transcript are we looking at?
That is the transcript from the June 4, 2018 probation violation admission.
Page 5?
Yes, page 5, lines 15 to 21, Mr. Schatz is specifically questioned that isn't it true that he was sentenced on a separate felony DWI file? His answer is yes. The conversation continues, and wouldn't you agree that that was in violation of condition of your probation? His answer, of course, is yes. But again, that's really never been raised as a defense in the post-conviction.
I note as well that on page 30, on line 14, the trial judge is addressing the matter towards the end of the hearing, and he says, and I'm sentencing you on the fourth DUI today in your probation violation hearing. This all occurs on the 4th of June. So it's pretty clear that the court, by vacating the stay and executing the sentence on June 4th, was referencing the DWI as well, which is what he says.
That is correct. That's my understanding as well. But to the specific...
Oh, are you going to continue on that topic?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, so I am now confused. So, not that I wasn't before, I may have been then too, but so are you saying that both bases, the DWI and the marijuana, are the basis for this probation revocation?
Yes, yes, I think.
But you didn't brief that.
I did not.
Okay, so what was he doing? And I thought he went to jail as a sanction for the DUI violation, and then in jail is when he tested. So in other words, you can't go back as a district court and punish again, right?
That's correct.
A probation violation.
Yes.
So I thought that the probation violation resulted in the jail sentence that then led to the test that resulted in this probation violation. But you're saying that's wrong, or are you saying the district court punished the DUI twice in probation violation? I don't get it.
My review of the transcript shows that both probation violations were addressed.
And the probation violation is from the earlier DWI.
I'm sorry, what was that, Jed?
And that probation violation for the DWI is for the earlier DWI.
That may have been, but as I understand it, that at the June 4 hearing, that two violations were being addressed.
Yes.
The failure to remain law-abiding and the THC use.
And the DUI had not previously been addressed. It wasn't the basis for him going to jail.
Not to my knowledge.
Well, why did he go to jail for those?
For the second DWI. That's why he went to jail.
That was my understanding, yes. And the test result came back while he was checking in for work release. That's my understanding. My review of the transcript shows that he admitted to two violations, failing to remain law-abiding and marijuana use. And with regard to the marijuana use, Mr. Schatz...
So do you agree then that if that this DWI or that this marijuana use, if it were vacated, makes no difference because he's still going to be serving the executed prison sentence on that earlier DWI?
In reality, it probably doesn't. In reality, it probably doesn't. But I do want to focus
on... And in reality, deciding Austin factors and in terms of public safety, that marijuana wouldn't support that factor at all, but having that last DWI surely would.
Certainly the use is a much greater violation than the THC use. The new charge is much greater than the THC use. But at any rate, I do believe that it was not clearly erroneous for the judge to find that Mr. Schatz did use marijuana. We had three different admissions of marijuana use from Mr. Schatz. He admitted to jail staff on March 22 when the sample was taken. He admitted 4 days later on March 26 to his probation agent when the admission of use form was signed.
I'm sorry, I do need to understand this part. I'm gonna just back up a second on the cases. So in 778, that case number, he was put on probation, right? He's on probation because of case number 778, I think is the number.
Yes.
Then in 640, he's charged with a DWI, right?
Yes.
And then what my notes reflect is that on March 20th, he admitted the violation relative to that DWI, pleads guilty and got 365 days in jail. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Okay.
On March 20th. And then on March 22nd, there's a new violation report. And then on June 14th, he pleads responsible and essentially probation's revoked. I don't understand what if on March 20th he admitted the violation and gets the jail time, how that self-same violation could be part of the March 22nd report. I'm confused.
And to supplement Judge Smith's comment, there is an order in the file dated March 20th of 2018 saying you are reinstated to probation in file 778. Suggesting that there must have been some conversation before the 22nd about the violation that the ninth DWI amounted to in relation to the eighth conviction.
And that very well could be. I have not reviewed that particular transcript. I'm really focusing on the THC use. But, you know, as I mentioned, according to that transcript from June 4, it does appear as if both violations were taken into consideration, both use and a new DWI. If that's not the case, it's simply not the case. But again, I believe it's fairly clear that Mr. Schatz did use. To your point, Judge Smith, would it be factually impossible to show that just because it isn't labeled positive on the test, is that still controlling as to whether Mr. Schatz used marijuana or not? And to that point, I don't believe it is.
I have a question about, unless you're finished, I have a question. I don't mean to stop you here.
I was just going to say that I could have used retroactive extrapolation to show that, in fact, Mr. Schatz likely did use by going back in time. The burn-off for marijuana use is very similar to the burn-off in alcohol use. And many states are using extrapolation in THC DWI cases or THC impaired driving cases. And I believe that I could have done the same thing in this particular case had Mr. Schatz raised that on either March 22, March 26, June 4, or June 21.
My question relates to that drug admission form, because this is a very confusing file, frankly. And that file says that he admits that he used drugs on March 3, 1918, specifically marijuana. I don't know where March 3 came from. There's no reference to March 3 anywhere else in the record. But then, at the probation violation hearing on the, a few days later, or not the violation hearing, yeah, I guess it was the violation hearing, he corrects it, appellant corrects it to March 30th. Trouble is that March 30th is some days after the admission date, which makes no sense either, because that's the 26th.
Yes, I see that, Judge Klapacki. I see that the drug use admission form was signed on March 26.
So it clearly can't reference a March 30th violation.
It cannot reference a March 30th.
But that's what he says on the transcript, because someone says March 3 and says, no, March 30th. But March 3 isn't anywhere in the record as to a date when supposedly he was using marijuana, other than that admission statement.
March 3 is not in the probation violation, nor is it in the transcript. March 3 simply comes from Mr. Schatz, presumably.
So how much value is that admission statement when it references a date that, if it's the 30th, cannot be, and if it's the 3rd, probably isn't true because there is no reference to anything about March 3?
Well, he admitted on March 26 to using on March 3rd.
Yeah. This whole business of his claim here is that he was forced into making this admission. And the trial court paid not much attention to it, claiming, in fact, that he was perjuring himself and that he lacked in credibility because he's coming up with this new theory a year later. But, you know, the original hearing on... in 2018, when the appellant is asked about the form and the business about, let me find it now. He states in that original hearing that he was talked into admitting that. So that's the idea that he was talked into was not something new that he came up with a year later, because a year earlier he referenced it. But neither the prosecution, nor the defense counsel, nor the judge even talked about it.
I did, Judge. At the post-conviction relief hearing, I did call Agent Brian Reuger, who was the agent who signed this form.
I'm talking about
Mr.
the year,
Schatz.
Hearing the year earlier when he said he was talked into it. No discussion by anybody, and the trial court just kind of slid right over that.
That is correct. There is not a discussion about it.
But at least it was clear that this wasn't something he made up a year later.
Correct.
So my question is, if the trial court's basing its finding on lack of credibility, on the fact that he's coming up with this something new, when in fact it came up a year earlier in front of this same judge, is that a finding that is on credibility supported by the evidence, by the record?
I don't think so, Judge. His attorney never raised it.
No, that's not my question. My question is the judge's finding about credibility subject to a challenge of being clearly erroneous as not being something he just made up a year later, because he, in fact, had referenced it a year earlier in front of that same judge?
Yeah, I don't think so, Judge. I don't think that would fall into to any clearly erroneous standard. Mr. Schatz had admitted on three different occasions in open court under sworn testimony.
But at least to the extent that it references that admission, that is not a supportable basis for finding a lack of credibility, is it, on this record?
I don't see that it really comes into the mix here. Again, he right in open court admitted that he didn't have any evidence to challenge the test, that he used marijuana. He had counsel. He knew what he was admitting to. It was fairly clear that he said that he was using marijuana to fit in with a female friend. I understand that he may have said that he felt like he was being talked into it, but I did have the probation agent testify that there was no offers made to him, that there were no inducements
except
made.
Except the officer acknowledged, the probation officer, that he wasn't present earlier in the time when the appellant says that these jailers were talking to him about what was going to happen and if he didn't admit.
On the March 22 admission that Mr. Schatz made, the probation agent was not a part of those discussions. He was, of course, a part of the discussions on March 26. And when this was placed on the record, when the admission was placed on the record on June 4, he never alluded that there were any promises made or that there was overt pressure put on him. He said he was talked into it, but his attorney never went into anything. And then a year and a half, over a year later, comes the post-conviction relief motion. And it really doesn't flesh out what was said, who said it, what the circumstances were, how he felt that his will was overcome or overborne. Again, he admitted to it three times. The first time was March 22, then March 26, then again, you know, over 2 months later on June 4. So I don't believe that he had appropriately raised it. And he had counsel all through that process. I think it's clear that Mr. Schatz did it, use marijuana in violation of his probation. Again, he admitted to it three times. He signed the admission to use form, and he was 11 nanograms shy of a technical positive result. But had he challenged?
Do you agree that if, in fact, there were an Austin Factors challenge, you'd have a difficult time sustaining a revocation of probation on the public safety aspect based upon this marijuana use?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I don't. Mr. Schatz had numerous opportunities, probation opportunities, numerous treatment opportunities. It was his ninth DWI. He knew that he was not to be using mood-altering substances, and essentially what he did is he traded one mood-altering substance for another mood-altering substance. And although I know it's 0.39 nanograms, we could have used retroactive extrapolation to show that had they tested him earlier, it likely would have been above that 0.50 threshold. And the bottom line is he did admit three different times, once in open court with counsel, to using marijuana.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Longstorff, you have 5 minutes if you wish to use that time.
So going back to the order in which these things were sentenced and what was dealt with on June 4th of 2018 and what was before, I guess our primary basis for the belief that the new DUI, the June 2017 DUI, was dealt with on March 20th is there is a probation violation order in case number 7 that ends 778. And it's stamped, filed by the Le Sueur County District Court March 20, 2018. And it says that you're reinstated to probation on the following terms. And our position is that dealt with and disposed of the new DUI as far as what consequence that was going to have on the probation violation. And then even if the district court did say later that it was considering those factors, that had already been dealt with, and it was inappropriate to do so. So the sole basis really is the marijuana use and the purported positive test.
Well, as long as we're on that March 20th order, it does indeed say, check the box, you are reinstated to probation on the following terms and conditions. And then all of the boxes that follow are blank. So in other words, there are no identified terms and conditions. The only other thing on the document is a date and a signature. So I don't really understand what that was.
I'm not 100% certain what it is either, Your Honor, other than it's in the 778, which is the earlier case, and that's the one that we believe was dealt with when Mr. Schatz was sentenced into the 640 with the 365 days and then was continued on probation on this case.
Well, in reading the transcript of the probation violation hearing, which I assume you have done, you recognize where the trial court does talk about that violation based upon that most recent DWI.
I agree, Your Honor, that they do that. Our position is that the probation violation order disposed of that, and really this was, I mean, they talked about it, but this new admission or the new violation was because of the marijuana and not this, and this had disposed of it. And then going back to the question about what the headline in this case would be, I don't have the specific words, but I think it would be something like, to be constitutionally valid, a probation violation admission must be knowing, voluntary, and intelligent. And then sort of the reasoning why this applies is what I talked about earlier, where in a probation violation, a defendant has many of the same, but not all of the rights that he would have in a regular plea hearing. And so I think they're fairly analogous and that it's not really a big step to say that a plea admission, or excuse me, a probation violation admission also needs to satisfy those same factors in order to be valid. Absent questions, I have nothing further.
It appears we have none. Thank you. The matter is submitted and we'll issue our decision within 90 days. We thank counsel for your briefing and argument.